The Blue Water Chamber of Commerce hosts a variety of networking events, connecting their members with leads, referrals, and people they can do business with. See what's happening at the Chamber and how they can help your business grow at bluewaterchamber.com.
All right, it is 8:40, finally Friday morning. I don't know how many more of these unprecedented historic days we can take, but we had another one yesterday in which a former president, who is the current front runner for the nomination, Republican nomination next year, appeared in court to answer federal charges, pleaded not guilty, Donald Trump did, to the indictment, which charges him with conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct an official proceeding, obstruction and conspiracy against the right to vote and have one's vote counted. Joining us right now to talk more about these very serious charges and what may happen next is former U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, now in private practice with the Honigman Law Group, Matthew Schneider. Matthew, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, I appreciate you joining us. Let's talk a little bit about these charges. These are probably the most serious charges the former president is facing, aren't they?
They're all serious charges. I mean, any time you're charged with any federal crime, it's incredibly serious. It exposes you to jeopardy, including federal prison time. So the Mar-a-Lago case is significant as well. And I think if you ranked these cases in their strengths, the strongest case against President Trump would be the Mar-a-Lago documents case. That's relatively straightforward. Those cases have been brought before. Less strong is the case that we saw yesterday, the January 6th case. It's unique. It hasn't been done. There are some pretty good defenses for President Trump here that he can raise. And then the last case is this New York charge, which is kind of a business case where Trump had a lot to not do with that, and I think that's the weakest of the three.
Of course, you know, waiting in the wings is Georgia, which maybe we'll have you back when those charges come. But that's likely to be probably in the weeks ahead, too, right?
Yes, it is. And in fact, not only that Georgia case, I think, will be coming down the pipe. But as we saw in the Mar-a-Lago case, the president was indicted and then he was indicted again down there in what's called a superseding indictment. They brought additional charges against him related to obstruction of justice. It's entirely possible that that will happen in the January 6th case as well, where more charges will be brought. So, you know, the Georgia case isn't the end of the road by any means. This could be sticking around for other things coming up.
The timing of this is being called into question by Republicans, saying that this is the weaponization of the Justice Department, simply trying to put a former president and a presidential candidate again on trial. In the midst of a presidential election, does there seem to be any evidence for that? Why did they not charge him 2 years ago, say?
Well, it took a while to get this case together, and I've been dealing with the special counsel's office. I have witnesses who have been called before that committee and the grand jury, so I know it takes a long time. As far as the weaponization or the politicalization of the Justice Department goes, you know, those are good political arguments, and they're good policy arguments to make on the campaign trail or to the voters, to the electorate. That makes a lot of sense to me to make that type of argument. But that argument usually does not work in a courtroom. The political argument, almost always fail in the court of law. And we're in that court of law now. So he's got to really start making those legal arguments about he had a constitutional free speech right to do these things and stick to the law instead of those political arguments. That's where he would have more success.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about what his defense is likely to be. What are his attorneys going to argue that gave him the right to do what he's charged with doing, or that he did not, try to defraud the election, essentially?
So the prosecution is arguing that President Trump's top advisors, his attorney general, national security advisors, campaign aides, everyone else was telling him, you lost the election and you can't re-win it. It's over. And here's the evidence for that. And the prosecution theory is that President Trump knew that. He knew that he lost, but yet he lied. And he started telling people, I won and I want you to reverse those votes at the Capitol on January 6th and put them in my favor. That's their argument. The defense to that is President Trump was receiving advice from other people. He was receiving advice from several lawyers outside of his official circles, campaign lawyers, other people, Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, John Eastman. He's getting all this advice. And if you look at history, You know, President Lincoln, he took outside advice as well. LBJ, FDR famously ignored his lawyers and got outside legal counsel to help him, completely out of the chain of command. This has been done before. So the president's defense could very well be, I was listening to these lawyers. They're smart people. They gave me advice that I had won the election, and I agreed with them. And, you know, his argument, it's not a bad one. How can you be prosecuted for following legal advice, even if it's bad legal advice? And that's really a strong argument for him in many respects.
How hard is it going to be to convict Donald Trump on these charges?
It'll be difficult because the amount of witnesses that they'll have to have these people coming in to talk about the president's intent. And any time you have an intent case, it's based on circumstantial evidence, what was happening around the time, not necessarily direct evidence. Although in this case, we do have the president's own words. And some of those words are very damning for him and very damning for his case. So, look, it's impossible. No lawyer, no good lawyer, should be able to say right now how he or she knows how this case will turn out. We've got a long road ahead of us, a long road of figuring out who's on the jury, what these constitutional arguments are, and what the appeals might be. So we'll be having, I'll have to be checking in with you as this goes on.
Well, and I hope we can, because the term trial of the century gets thrown around, I think, too often. This really is maybe the most important trial we'll have ever seen.
In my view, this is the most important criminal case ever brought in the history of the United States. It's so much larger, so much more impactful. And don't think that this is going to be a short trial. This could be weeks. This could be months. So that goes against the argument that all of this will be wrapped up with a bow before Election Day. It's possible, but I think that's very unlikely.
We'll be in touch. It's going to be really interesting to see how this all unfolds. Matthew, thanks for your analysis. Really appreciate it this morning.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.